Welcome to True Crime Cat Lawyer. I'm your host, Elise, and sometimes my cat Winston joins me. This podcast contains content of a graphic nature that might not be suitable for all listeners, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, and crimes against animals and children. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode. February is National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. Although we've discussed domestic violence in the past, we haven't necessarily focused on teen dating violence. So, added trigger warning here, we will be discussing domestic violence in this episode, so please listen with caution. Teen dating violence is a lot more common than you might think, which is actually terrifying. 81% of parents believe that teen dating violence either isn't an issue or they don't know if it's an issue. In actuality, 1 in 12 high school students experience physical or sexual dating violence. 1 in 5 women and 1 in 7 men experience some form of partner violence, such as rape, physical violence, or stalking, between the ages of 11 and 17. Only 33% of dating abuse victims told someone about the abuse. Although abuse at any age is harmful, teen victims are particularly vulnerable because their brains are still developing. Victims of teen dating violence are more likely to experience depression and anxiety, engage in drug and alcohol abuse, and attempt suicide. Female victims of dating violence often experience more severe and longer-lasting consequences than male victims. As we often do with domestic violence cases, I want to go over some particular warning signs / red flags for teenagers and their parents to look out for. Warning signs or red flags include the abuser checking your phone and social media accounts without your permission, the abuser putting you down frequently, especially in front of other people, the abuser isolating you from friends and family, the abuser is extremely jealous or insecure, the abuser is possessive or controlling, and the abuser pressures or forces you to have sex. Negative or abusive behaviors in unhealthy relationships are more likely to increase over time. Those behaviors also escalate as the relationship progresses. We'll include resources for teen dating violence in the show notes, but if you need immediate help, please contact the Love is Respect organization at 1-866-331-9474. 18-year-old Karami Barreto Sabalza was in one of the best moments of her life. She was getting ready to graduate high school and she planned to attend South Seattle College, then go on to nursing school with a scholarship. Karami was described as caring, funny, outgoing, and honest. She worked the front desk at an assisted living facility. But there was also something dark in Karami's life too. Karami started dating 19-year-old Giovanni Heron in early 2018, and this guy was no saint. He had several robbery convictions from 2014 and 2015, and his ex-girlfriend's parents got a protection order against him in 2015 after Heron threatened to kill his ex-girlfriend's family, himself, or his ex-girlfriend if she ever left him. On June 15, 2018, Karami and Heron took Karami's little sister to the movies. The next day, Heron spent the day at the assisted living center where Karami worked. Karami was supposed to have dinner with her family on the 16th, but she never made it. A passerby came across a young woman who had been brutally attacked, shot in the head at close range, and left for dead on a trail in Salt Air Vista Park in Kent, Washington. This young woman was 18-year-old Karami. She was still alive when the stranger found her, but she later died from her injuries. As police started investigating the case, they found out a lot of information about Karami and Heron's relationship. A few weeks before Karami died, she sent messages to her friends saying that she was afraid of Heron and was in fear for her life. She also told them that Heron had used her bank account information without her permission, and he told her that she, quote, better watch out, end quote. This prompted Karami to tell a friend that if something ever happened to her, her friend needed to, quote, report it and say it was Gio, end quote. Karami was scared that Heron was going to kill her, She specifically told one of her friends, quote, "I'm literally so scared for my life," end quote. Karami also told that same friend that Heron would, quote, "kill himself to make it seem like she did it," end quote. A witness came forward and told police that they saw a couple go into the wooded area near the park, but then the man came out alone. An acquaintance of Heron's also saw Heron leaving the park in Karami's car. Police pretty much zeroed in on Heron as the one and only suspect. They used cell phone tracking to locate Heron at a home in South Seattle. When they arrived, they found Heron getting into Karami's car. He led police on a car chase, but police eventually laid down a spike strip and used a pit maneuver to stop Heron. Heron was arrested on June 20th. Police found 3 unspent bullets in his apartment when they searched it. Police also found out that Heron was wanted on a $10,000 bench warrant at the time of his arrest. As detectives continued to gather evidence in the case, they found an ATM receipt from Karami's debit card in Heron's car. The receipt was timestamped for 7:32 p.m. on the day Karami was shot. Police located still photos from the ATM location, which showed Heron taking money out of her account and driving Karami's car. In a dumpster near Heron's apartment, police found Heron's clothes from the day of the shooting. In Heron's initial interview with police, he tried to blame someone else for the murder. Heron claimed that a man had chased him and Karami before pulling out a gun and shooting Karami. In another story, Heron said it was his brother that shot Karami. But the real story was this. Heron lured Karami to Salt Air Vista Park, where he strangled Karami and then shot her in the head. Heron then stole Karami's car and debit card, withdrew money from an ATM, and then used it to buy marijuana. On July 4th, 2018, Heron was taken to a local hospital after he said that he was feeling sick. But when he got there, he was able to escape, got into a Lyft, and attempted to carjack the Lyft driver, injuring the man in the process. Police were able to track Heron down, and he was shot, but he survived because he had non-life-threatening injuries, so he was taken back to the hospital. Heron went through 3 trials and 2 previous jury convictions. He was ultimately convicted of first-degree murder with a domestic violence and firearm enhancement, along with second-degree escape. Heron was sentenced to 37 years in prison on September 25, 2023. Karami's family said that although the conviction and sentencing wouldn't bring Karami back, it would bring some measure of justice to the people who loved Karami. Shyandia Harris was born on May 4, 2002. She was raised by her aunt and uncle in Portland, Oregon. Shyandia played volleyball and the violin, and she enjoyed dancing and styling hair. She planned to move to Atlanta after graduation so that she could go to cosmetology school. Shyandia was a beautiful, intelligent, and loving person. Her family said she was going to quote-unquote go places, and she was an amazing kid growing up into adulthood. Shyandia was deeply loved by her family. Shyandia graduated from Park Rose High School on June 9, 2020. Prior to her graduation, Shyandia had been dating 21-year-old Kasion Colbert. There isn't a lot of information about this case, so I'm not really sure why the couple broke up. But on June 10th, Shyandia's mom got a call from her daughter. Shyandia told her mom that Colbert was going to shoot her. Her mom could hear Colbert threatening Shyandia, and then she heard every parent's nightmare. She heard 3 gunshots. Shyandia was shot in the head, stomach, and back. She was shot in broad daylight at 12:45 p.m. And sadly, she died at the scene before first responders arrived. Because of Shyandia's call to her mom, police immediately wanted to track down Colbert. An arrest warrant for Colbert was obtained on June 14, 2020. Shyandia's family claimed that before Colbert was arrested, he threatened them on social media. But he was ultimately arrested by U.S. Marshals in Vancouver, Washington. Some neighbors who witnessed the shooting came forward and told police that someone in a car drove up, called Shyandia over, and then shot her multiple times before driving off. Colbert was initially charged with second-degree murder, but he eventually pled guilty to first-degree manslaughter and unlawful use of a weapon. At sentencing, Shayandia's family told Colbert that they didn't understand why he shot their daughter. Colbert apologized and said that the shooting was an accident. He said he cared about Shayandia and claimed that he was trying to leave when Shayandia, quote-unquote, confronted him in his car. According to Colbert, Shayandia grabbed his hair and started reaching for the gun in Colbert's fanny pack, and it fired by accident. Colbert told Shayandia's family that if he could switch places with them, he would. He said that they had the right to feel the way they did about him and Shayandia's murder. In November 2022, Colbert was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Our final case is also out of Portland, Oregon. 19-year-old Amara Marluk was a student at Portland State University. She was a singer/songwriter who was studying music. She was co-president of the Black Student Union, and she was an advocate for social and racial justice issues. Amara was an activist who always tried to help people who couldn't speak for themselves. She was dedicated to fighting for racial equality, and she was passionate about being a voice for change. Amara had a quote-unquote rough start in life. She lived with her biological mom and younger siblings until she was 6 years old. Amara and her siblings grew up in the foster care system before Amara was adopted when she was 9 years old. Amara spent years recovering from her childhood trauma. She went from being 2 years behind in school to graduating with honors in 2021. She even earned a scholarship for Portland State University, and she was the first in her family to go to college. According to her family, Amara had a, quote, endless capacity to love and help others, end quote. She was beloved by her family and fellow students, and she was the light of her family's lives and a beautiful and caring soul. Amara met 21-year-old Keenan Harpool when she was doing laundry. They lived on the same floor of the student apartments. Harpool was a freshman at PSU, and he was a former running back on the PSU football team. He graduated from high school in Bend, Oregon as a former star athlete. Harpool was Amara's first boyfriend and her first love. Amara hadn't really been interested in dating in high school because she was too mature for high school boys. One thing that bothered Amara was that Harpool never wanted to meet her parents. They'd set something up and then Harpool would freak out and cancel. Amara's mom said that there were warning signs of abuse in the relationship. The couple was on again, off again, and Amara continued to give Harpool repeated chances, even after he hit her. Amara didn't report the assault to police or to the university. But after Harpool hit Amara, he suddenly became dead set on meeting her parents. But at that point, Amara's parents were no longer interested in meeting him. Amara had tried to end the relationship several times, so her parents were trying to help get Amara away from Harpool, who they felt was a quote-unquote master manipulator. On April 4th, 2022, Amara was shot outside a convenience store that was located directly between her apartment and her workplace near the PSU campus around 1 a.m. Amara sadly passed away from her gunshot wounds. It quickly became apparent that Harpool was the most likely suspect. He was arrested in Bend, Oregon on property that his family owned after agreeing to turn himself in. Harpool was booked on charges of second-degree murder and unlawful use of a weapon. At his arraignment, Harpool pled not guilty. As far as I can tell, Harpool hasn't been offered a plea deal and the case hasn't gone to trial as of the date of this episode. We'll keep you posted on any updates in this case as they become available. Thank you as always for listening to this episode. If you think your teenager might be dealing with dating violence, please contact the Love is Respect hotline at 1-866-331-9474. You can also text Love Is to 22522 or log on to loveisrespect.org for chat support. Love is Respect is an extension of the National Domestic Violence Hotline and support is available 24/7. Support for teens and their parents is confidential. Even if you just need someone to listen, Love is Respect and the National Domestic Violence Hotline advocates are there for that support. One important and life-saving feature that both websites offer is the ability to quickly exit out of their websites if necessary. Both websites have a ton of information, resources, and support for survivors of teen dating violence and domestic violence. We'll include a link to both sites in our show notes.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review if you like the show. You can email case suggestions or comments to truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. The links for our social media pages are included in the show notes. And if you want more content, head over to Patreon to join one of our available tiers. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about my co-host, you can check out her Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.